To quote Thomas Jefferson, a well-informed citizenry is the best defense against tyranny. Welcome to the Constitution Solution, one podcast under God, where we discuss the basics of our constitutional republic and how our freedoms are being seized by public officials, both elected and unelected. I'm Mark DeLuzio, a former candidate for the U.S. Congress and a Gold Star father. Join me as we learn together how we can save this unique experiment that we call America. Hey, Mark DeLuzio, back at you guys again, episode 46. I want to talk about tariffs in the Constitution. Tariffs are a really hot issue right now. Now, if you have not listened to my episode on the 16th Amendment and taxes, and we talk a lot about tariffs in episode 42, I'd suggest you listen to that either before or after this one, because they kind of tie together in terms of how this whole thing came together with tariffs and where we are today with the income tax and how our country was meant to generate revenue and how we're generating revenue today, primarily from direct taxation on taxpayers. So take a look at episode 42. It was done a couple weeks ago. And get educated on the 16th Amendment, because I'm going to talk about how that amendment did not give Congress the right to tax our income. They already had that right. What it did is it took away the apportionment clause in the Constitution, which allowed for the graduated income tax, which is a tenet of Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, a heavy and graduated income tax. So I talk all about that in episode 42, and it does tie into tariffs and what I want to talk to you about today, the constitutionality of tariffs and how that all works in the Constitution. Let's not forget now, why are people against tariffs? A couple reasons. One, the Marxists, and as I indicated, the Communist Manifesto, they want direct taxation of your income. They want to be able to control you. When they control your money, they control you. They also want a very heavy central bank, which they got in 1913, along with the 16th Amendment. The central bank, in this case, being the Federal Reserve System. You control the money supply, you control the economy, you control everything, okay? So communists want a graduated income tax, and tariffs are not what they had in mind. Now, remember, prior to the 1913 16th Amendment, most all of our taxes were generated through tariffs and excise taxes, okay? All of the federal government's revenue. And the founding fathers viewed tariffs as the least objectionable form of taxation, okay? They best supported, they also thought, a limited government. Now, this was unanimous. There weren't too many things that the founders were unanimous on, because they fought like cats and dogs. You know, Adams wanted a bigger government. So did Hamilton. Hamilton wanted more federal control of the money supply. Jefferson and Madison, who wrote the Constitution, and Jefferson, who wrote the Declaration of Independence, wanted a more limited government. And thank God we ended up at least starting out that way. But as you can see in 1913, and we talk a lot about that in various episodes in this podcast, how we lost control of that limited government, and we also lost control of the checks and balances between the three branches. But there was a unanimous agreement that we would generate our revenue, unanimous agreement of the founding fathers, through tariffs, okay? And they were a primary source of revenue until the 20th century, until that 16th Amendment, till 1913, when we did all those crazy things that year. Prior to the 20th century, and everybody says, you know, tariffs are going to kill the economy, it's going to put us into a recession, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. Well, think about the economy prior to the 20th century. It grew like crazy, more so than any other economy ever in the history of the world, okay? And it did that through multitude of wars, the Civil War, which is probably one of the more costly wars in our history, probably one of the more costly wars in the world. It did it through all that, okay? We grew and grew and grew. Kept inflation relatively low. Yeah, we had a couple economic issues throughout, you know, the 19th century. But overall, it worked. It worked without the income tax, okay? Now, at the end of World War II, we avoided levying significant tariffs on countries because this whole notion about we're a rich country, we have to build up the rest of the world, blah, 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 blah. And we were benevolent. And that had not been challenged at all by any president until President Trump. When he started looking at this, and I'll talk more about this in a few minutes. Hey, we're getting ripped off, guys. We got to wake up here. We just accepted these heavy tariffs from other countries to be the norm. Well, not President Trump. And again, I will talk more about that. Now, one thing happened in 1930. There was a Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act that went into place. And it was designed to protect industry and farmers during the Great Depression. It actually worsened the Great Depression. It didn't, you know, prolong it, or it just made it worse, okay? And the debates out there as to the impact these tariffs had. But what people fail to recognize and what these tariffs did in 1930, the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, over the course of the Depression from 1930 till about midway, 1935-36 timeframe, imports were curtailed drastically, okay, from our exports, I should say, and also imports. People didn't want to do business with us. So it did have an impact on the economy, but you got to remember, these tariffs were passed in the context of having a heavy income tax, okay? Now remember, prior to the 20th century, our primary source of revenue, with a couple minor exceptions, were coming from tariffs and excise taxes. We didn't do a double whammy and have an income tax on top of that, okay? So, yeah, you could blame the tariffs, but I think you have to blame the whole structure of our tax system as how that just doubled down and made the recession that much worse, okay? Winston Churchill had a very famous quote, which was kind of cool. He had a lot of quotes, but he said, "Tariffs are the worst form of taxation, except for all the others." Okay. So I guess in a roundabout way, Churchill was for tariffs as well. Hey, we have to get our revenue from someplace. And again, the founding fathers were in unanimous agreement that tariffs were the most appropriate form of revenue generation that would promote a limited federal government. Okay. All right. And if you go back to 1913, look at some of the episodes that we talked about, the fourth branch of government, the administrative state, really, you know, started by Woody Wilson. He was a big progressive, matter of fact, the father of the progressive movement. So starting all these agencies, which took away power from Congress and gave ceded power over to the executive branch. Through regulations, the president can essentially write law. Okay, that's not how this was supposed to be set up. Anyway, let's look at the tariffs in three different ways. One from a constitutional perspective, one from a political perspective, and one from an economics perspective. Okay, the Constitution. This is very simple. Congress has the power of the purse, which means that's where spending bills in the House of Representatives, spending bills start in Congress. They cannot start in the Senate. The Senate can amend or opine or suggest, but they have to start in Congress. They have the power of the purse, and they also have the power to collect taxes. Article 1, Section 8 consists of the enumerated powers. I believe there's 18 of them. The enumerated powers of Congress. In Article 1, Section 8, one of those enumerated powers is Congress is delegated the power. Remember, delegated the power means coming from the people. We are given Congress the permission we're delegating them the permission. Remember, the government doesn't give us any rights. This is a government controlled by the people. So the Constitution is the limit on what the government can do to abridge our freedoms, right? It protects us. It's supposed to anyway. All right. So we are delegating to the Congress the power to lay and collect taxes, duties, imposts, and excises. And that includes tariffs, okay? Article 1, Section 8, that Congress, not the president, can set tariffs. It also said Congress is empowered to regulate commerce with foreign nations. So as much as I love what President Trump is doing with tariffs, I support his strategy, I don't agree as to how. And this is where you've got to be very careful that you draw a fine line between what you like and what's constitutional. For example, I don't like flag burning. Flag burning was found to be a constitutional First Amendment right. I hate flag burning. My father fought for our flag. My sons fought. I lost a son in war because of the flag, fighting for our flag. So I detest flag burning, okay? But I understand the First Amendment right to burn it. And Judge Scalia, the most constitutionally centered jurist we ever had on the court, actually agreed and voted for supporting the right to burn the flag. So even though you hate something, and people say, no, we should make an amendment that it's illegal to burn the flag. Well, what's next? What Pandora's box did you just open? The same thing with these tariffs. As much as I like what President Trump is doing, and I agree in principle about his strategy, and hopefully this will lead to elimination of the income tax, okay? I don't think Congress has the guts to do it. I think Congress is weak. They have been weak, and they continue to be weak. They don't know what to do when they have their own power, okay? This is a golden time right now. They can really make some hay, and right now the budget that's in Congress right now has a $4 trillion budget deficit. I mean, that's heresy. Okay, so I don't know what these guys are doing. None of the Doge savings are being reflected in the budget. And, you know, like anything, if this does not get legislated through Congress into law, then what's to say the next president can, by a stroke of a pen, reverse all these tariffs and everything else that President Trump is trying to do? This is not the way to do it. As much as I like the way he's, you know, the strategy, it's not the way to do it. It's unconstitutional. And again, as much as I support President Trump, my first allegiance is to our country and to our Constitution, not to any political party or not to any politician. Okay? So be careful what you ask for when it comes to matters like this. Okay? You may like something that's unconstitutional. You will rue the day that you made that decision because you opened up the Pandora's box for further aggressions on and transgressions on your freedoms. Okay. But the president does have some power in this regard. As far as spending bills go, and tariffs for that matter, he has the power to veto or to sign them into law. That's his power. That's his checks and balances. That's his executive branch power. So he does have power, but just to come out and arbitrarily say, hey, we're going to put 140% tax on this country or that country, he can't do. Constitutionally, he can't do it. Okay. Well, let's talk about why he does it. All right. In 1934, when FDR, the darling of the left, was president, there's another guy that did immense damage to our country in so many different ways. There was a Reciprocal Trade Agreement Act of 1934. It gave the president the authority to change tariff rates up to 50%. Now, think about this. Congress takes their power that they had per Article 1, Section 8, and says, you can give it over to the executive branch. And for some reason, this never got challenged in court, in front of the Supreme Court. It never got challenged. And it's almost 100 years old. 1934. It never got challenged. It's mind-boggling to me, the things that the Supreme Court chooses to pick. And yeah, you got to bring a case in front of the Supreme Court. You mean tell me nobody tried to bring this? And if they did, I should look this up because I'm sure somebody tried to do this. They didn't select the case to hear. You know, every year, there's thousands of cases that get petitioned in front of the court, and the Supreme Court decides which ones they're going to hear that year. Come on, there's only 9 jurors, so they can't hear everything, which means that there's a hell of a lot of laws out there today that got passed that are unconstitutional. How could they track them all? There's thousands of laws. I made this statement, I think, last episode, where right now I'm probably breaking some kind of federal law. I have no idea what it could be. You're probably breaking one too. And a lot of these laws conflict, okay? Damned if you do, damned if you don't. So there are so many laws out there today. I don't know if the Founding Fathers ever envisioned Congress writing so many damn laws, because they did believe that we would be thinking about a limited government. And funny that people say, you know, nothing's getting done in Congress. Nothing's getting done. We got to get things done. Really? I don't want them to write any more laws. Do you? At least not the laws they've been writing. Okay. And it shows a very inept understanding of the founders wanted it to be very difficult to write a law, very difficult to write legislation. And I think what you got to do, you got to first pass it in your own house, debate it and all that. Then it goes to the Senate and they jerk around with it for a while. Then it goes to some kind of committee to even out all the differences. Then it goes to the president. You know, but I guess as long as you got that bridge in your district in the law, you're going to vote for something unconstitutional. What do you care? Because you need to get elected. You need to come back in the next 2 years and run again, right? So that's what happens here, okay? All these attachments. And, you know, just deviating for a minute, you know, Ronald Reagan wanted the Supreme Court, and they did, look at line item veto, and the Supreme Court ruled it unconstitutional and didn't allow it. And by the way, I agree with the Supreme Court as much as I don't like it. But I don't know why the president can't say, hey, look, I'm only going to sign single-issue bills. I'm not going to allow you to attach all this other crap to a bill to make the bill 7,000 pages when I'm passing something for veterans, but you got things in there for Planned Parenthood. This is where, you know, politicians get caught, because it's like, damned if you, damned if you don't. Well, you didn't vote for that bill. Yeah, because they had Planned Parenthood in it. Well, you're against veterans, you know? I mean, you see how it works? So I don't know why the president can't be a little bit stronger and just say, hey, look, I'm only going to even look at single issue. I'm going to veto everything else. Okay. Anyway, that might not work, but anyway, the way they run it right now is it's a travesty, in my opinion. But the reciprocal trade agreement allowed the president the authority to change tariff rates up to 50%. Okay. Congress ceded its power to the executive branch. Once again, just like they did with the military industrial complex, the president with the 1972 War Powers Act can now bring our troops into war without going to Congress for a period of time. Okay. So you got to believe that there's a lot of Marxists in Congress who are trying to cede all this over to the president, because this is just another globalist tactic here. Okay. Americans, though, as far as this whole tariff issue, when this, 1934 reciprocal trade agreement was passed, were blissfully ignorant, and they still are. Okay. And this is why I do this podcast. I want to educate people on what the heck our country is supposed to be all about. But Americans are unbelievably ignorant and misinformed and miseducated on the Constitution and what this thing is supposed to be all about. Now, there is a bill in play here, H.R. 2665, the Trade Review Act of 2025, which is trying to reinstate the power back to Congress to set tariffs. I'm not sure exactly where that bill is right now, but that's where it is. Okay. By the way, H.R. 2665, I'm not sure how they number these bills. Does that mean that is the 2,665th bill passed this congressional session? I don't know. I think that's how it works. I'll have to look that up. Okay. So bottom line, with the Constitution, unconstitutional for the president, regardless how much you like what he's doing or don't like what he's doing, it's unconstitutional, in my opinion. And that 1934 reciprocal trade agreement, I just don't understand how a Congress can write a law to go against what's in the Constitution. I just don't understand that at all. And it's not the only time that's happened, by the way. But It's mind-boggling to me. Okay, let's talk about the politics of tariffs. President Trump's correct that we're getting screwed by these countries, Canada, Mexico, Europe, China. They're all ripping us off, okay? And this was ignored by both sides of the aisle until President Trump, George Bush, Herbert Walker, and George, his son, George the Lesser, if you will. Both those Bushes, Reagan, all these presidents ignored and just took tariffs as, not something I'm going to really look at. I got other things to do, right? The whole idea here is this is a way to redistribute global wealth. These tariffs were crazy. Now people say, well, wait a minute now, Mark. The United States can't do everything. We can't produce everything in the world. Oh, really? And this is a red herring, okay? When they say, well, how about mango fruit? You expect us to grow and have the quality of mango fruit that, for example, India has? By the way, when I was in India, they say, hey, Mark, you got to have some mango fruit. It's only like a month or so in June, I think, I say, what the hell is a big deal about mango fruit? I ate some of their mango fruit. It was like eating candy. I could not believe how unbelievably delicious it was. Nothing like I ever had in the U.S. Okay, so we can't grow mango fruit, not the way they do. They have the right temperate climate. They had everything there needed to get the right ingredients and all that. Okay, great. However, if we have all the resources pretty much in the United States, and the Founding Fathers knew this, by the way, to make virtually anything made anywhere in the world, we can make it here. Okay, we have all the natural resources. We have the wood. We have the land. We have the right climates, oil reserves, energy. We have everything. Minerals, okay? I mean, the state I came from, Arizona, was founded based on copper. The whole state, that's why people move there, okay? So we have it all. We have everything we can, anything that's produced pretty much anywhere we can make here. But we didn't. Why? We went to China, we went to Mexico, we went to Taiwan, and we went to Vietnam and Thailand. Why do we do that? And the ignorant argument is, and I've done a lot of math on this. I used to be a CFO and I know how to do the math. People say, oh, because of the labor cost. Really? The labor cost. So let's talk about this. A company has to build and maintain a facility in a foreign land. Okay, they go through all that cost. The distance to ship and the cost to ship product to the USA and the lead time and the time it takes, the business risk, especially when you're dealing in a foreign country, okay, the business risks involved. And many people don't know that, you know, you have to cede over 51% of your company if you're going to do business in China to the Communist Party, including your intellectual property. And I don't think they care about people going over there making yo-yos and paper plates, but I'm talking about sensitive technology, okay? There's a lot of risk, okay? Not only risk for the company going there, but risks for our nation. Medical technologies, for example. Didn't you find it ironic that during COVID, we had to go to China for all those medical supplies for COVID? It's like I'm looking at the box for a COVID test. It says made in China. Think about the irony there. Think about that. The guys that created, well, you can argue the United States created it, but the guys that created COVID, the COVID germ, okay, and the pandemic, I'm now buying a testing kit made by the same people? Are you nuts? There's no way I'm sticking those things on my nose, okay? My God. 95% of our antibiotics come from China. If they decided to shut us down, millions would die. Millions would die. Okay. People say to me, oh, you know, insulin, yeah, but our insulin comes from Denmark or it comes from another country. No, the raw materials come from China. All these companies that are making these life-saving products in Ireland and all these other places, many of the raw materials come from China. We allowed this to happen. This is a national security issue, in my opinion, okay? And we start talking about IP and military technology. You know, Huawei and ZTE hold a significant market share in 5G technology. 5G technology that we created here in the United States. I believe it was Motorola. Pretty much run by Huawei now over in China. All these companies are communist owned companies. And 5G technology, our military is moving over to 5G. They basically have the front door and the back door key to our defense systems. The computer that I'm using right now to do this recording, that computer that's in your closet, shut down with a dead battery, okay? They can get into it, okay? And 5G technology, by the way, has enough latency where it's now able to be used in driverless cars, or 4G, LTE. 4G was not, you know, didn't have the latency. Latency is how fast a signal comes back when it gets transmitted from the chip. Okay, 5G is fast enough now where you can have driverless cars. Matter of fact, in Arizona, haven't seen any here in North Carolina, but in Arizona, you go to Scottsdale, you see them all the time. Driverless cars driving around with no driver in it. There might be a guy in the back seat because it's the cab, I guess. But you know. 5G technology. So we are vulnerable right now from all this, you know, from medical, from antibiotics, from military technology, we're very vulnerable right now. So there's a lot of risk, not only for the companies that go there, but when you take all these costs I talked about, the transportation costs, the facilities, all the other things, you mean to tell me that the labor cost is the difference? That all that savings in labor overcomes all these other costs? No. Let me tell you what the costs are. The costs are generated by the U.S. government through high taxes and high regulations. That's where the costs come from. That's why companies have moved out of the United States to go to China, not to chase labor rate. Not to chase the labor rate. Matter of fact, most companies, you know, depending on the product, labor is only anywhere from 9 to 12% of the total cost of the product. It's not 80% of the cost of the product. Think about it. Think about your cell phone. I would guess that's about 10%. Well, probably less because it's in China, but you know, it's about 10% cost if it was made here for labor, cost of the product. Everything else is all the componentry and all the materials. In overhead, if you will. But it's the U.S. government that forced companies to go offshore. You'll never hear that on the news, and you'll never hear it from a politician. But our regulatory agencies have decimated our industries. Okay? Let me give you one example. When I was on the board of directors for Hillenbrand Corporation, a New York Stock Exchange company, there was something that came out of the Dodd-Frank Act. These are the two yo-yos that were complicit in causing the 2008 crisis. Now they wrote law to fix it, and they blamed all the banks and everything else, right? Maybe I'll do an episode on that too, because that was all government-generated through the Federal Reserve. But anyway, Dodd-Frank had a provision that companies now had to put into their proxy statement. Now, proxy is about anywhere from a 90 to 150 page document that's required by the Securities Exchange Commission. This is all for public companies, okay? But one of the things we had to put in the proxy statement based on the Dodd-Frank Act was a number, a single number that gave you the ratio of the CEO's salary to the average salary and wages, if you will, in the company. One number. So if I said, oh, the number is 10x, 10 times, that means the CEO makes 10 times the average salary in the company. Okay. If it's 50 times, whatever the number is, okay. That number, and that's the only guidelines you get, okay. That number cost us $350,000 of outside audit fees from our accounting firm, not counting the cost inside the company to come up with that number. And you're sitting there saying, well, Mark, what are you, nuts? To come up with a number costs you that much money? Yeah, I'll tell you why. No guidelines, no formula as to how to calculate it. So when you start looking at this, you start saying, okay, now I need to come up with the CEO salary. Do I use long-term compensation? Do I use short-term compensation? Do I add his vehicle if he has a company car? How do I value his stock options? How about his stock grants? How do I value them? And when do I value them? Okay. Now let's talk about employees. Do I use part-timers? Full-timers? What happens when they get a raise halfway during the year? What number do I use? Do I use contractors, part-timers? Do I use, what about foreign exchange rates? I'm paying people in Europe and in China and in Mexico. What exchange rate do I use? All this stuff was never put into the regulations. They just told you, hey, go out and give us that number. Now, you might say, well, Mark, just pick a number and put it in there, right? Who cares? Because when you get some kind of auditor from the government coming in, asking questions, how did you get that number? Why did you say this? How did you get that? They could actually fine you and shut you down because you can't satisfy some 25-year-old auditor from the government who wasn't good enough to make it to a CPA firm, okay? And they're going to ask you all these crazy questions about, well, how did you get this? And why did you use that number? And why did you use that number? And all of a sudden, you start getting fined. And then it's bad PR and it's bad press. People start selling your stock. Okay, you see how this works? Okay, this is what the government does. And by the way, this is just one little tiny thing I'm talking about. Minor. This is minor compared to the bigger regulations that you have to go through. You would not believe the regulatory burden that's placed on corporations. I know somebody who is on the board of directors for a gun company. It's a public company. I asked him, I said, John, geez, I mean, why are you a public company? What are you, nuts? Why are you subjecting yourself to the SEC and all these crazy regulations? Okay, especially a gun company, right? So I'm giving you that example here because, you know, why did businesses go to China and offshore? That's why. It's not the labor. Everybody's going to tell you it's the labor. It's not the freaking labor, okay? It's the U.S. government. And then you get people like Nancy Pelosi who want to raise taxes on corporations and then, you know, criticize them for moving out of the country. You can't have it both ways. And you got the American public with the same thing. All corporations are making all this money, you know, while they go to Walmart and buy the goods that are made in China. They're looking for a deal too, right? Just like corporations are. So what's good for the goose is good for the gander, I guess they say, right? But in the meantime, Americans will criticize corporations for going offshore. Really? Why don't you try to run one of those companies? See how that works. See how long you keep your job, all right? So when President Trump comes in and reduces regulations and taxes like he did, he took our corporate tax rate, the highest in the world, was 35%, took down to 21%. Okay. Biden wanted to increase it. Thank God he didn't. He also wanted to increase the capital gains tax and unrealized capital gains. This is what these people are trying to do. Do you know what unrealized capital gains means? If you own a home that you say you buy a home for $500,000 and in 1 year it goes up to $600,000, you would be required to pay taxes on that $100,000 gain, even though you didn't cash it in. It's all on paper. This is what Harris wanted to do. This is what Biden wanted. Could you imagine what that would have done to our economy? So these people have no clue. Trump is a businessman. He understands how business works, and he wants everybody to win. Okay. It seems as if the only people who are winning are the U.S. government, not the American people and not corporations. Okay. Of which, by the way, so many of us hold our 401k plans in stock in corporations. Why would we want corporations to do poorly? Okay. So I just want you to understand that the economics here are such that we force companies offshore, but we do have all of the ability, except for luxury items like mango fruit and things that we can't produce here because of these issues, right? But once the economy stabilizes, and we're producing most of our own goods, okay, we're not going to have this issue, all right? It'll be a little bit of a pain to get there, but we can't do it. And I'll talk more about the summary here, what we have to do to make this work. Because, you know, as we saw in, let's learn from history, right? As we saw in 1930 with the Smoot-Hawley Tariff Act, we still had an income tax, and then they put these tariffs in, and it decimated, it prolonged the, I won't say it prolonged, but it made the impact of the Great Depression in the 1930s all that much tougher, right? And nobody's ever going to know what the real impact was, right? People who don't like tariffs, which are the Marxists, by the way, will say it prolonged a depression, okay? So all confirmation bias in terms of how people look at things like this. But I think the tariffs are the right thing, but they're being done the wrong way, okay? It's unconstitutional what President Trump is doing, in my opinion. Although there is a law that allows him to do it, the law to me is clearly, I'm not a lawyer, but the law is clearly unconstitutional, right? And let's keep in mind that tariffs are a rebuke to the Marxist world order. Remember, Karl Marx, in his Communist Manifesto, one of the 10 planks are a heavy and graduated income tax, which came by the way of the 16th Amendment, and we got duped back then in 1913. And Americans are still duped by that. They still don't understand the apportionment clause and what that meant. Go back to episode 42, and I explain the whole thing. Okay. Congress always had the right to tax their income. Okay. And just because we have a 16th Amendment doesn't mean they have to tax us that way. You see, Congress could write laws saying, hey, we're going to eliminate the income tax. There's nothing in the 16th Amendment that would prohibit them from doing that. Article 1, Section 8 gives them the right to tax us any way they see fit. But we can't generate revenue through tariffs in isolation. We have to kill the income tax and we have to kill the capital gains tax. You can't take it from both places, okay? That's got to go away. And in my heart of hearts, I really do believe President Trump, that's the road he's going on. I just don't know whether or not he has the support in Congress to do that. Congress, the U.S. Congress right now, maybe this is a whole other episode, but the U.S. Congress, Republican run, these guys are more worried about getting reelected than they are doing the right thing for the country. I don't see the will. I don't see there's a few of them out there that do have the will to do the right thing. I just don't see these people are on the same page with President Trump. Like I always said, these Republican congressmen, when they get power, it's like the dog chasing the proverbial car. Once he latches onto the chrome bumper, he doesn't know what to do with it. Okay. That's exactly how it looks to me when the Republicans have power in Congress, okay? They don't know what to do with it. And this is a golden time for them. This is probably a time of a lifetime because you're never going to have another president like President Trump. You say what you will about all the other guys that potentially could run, okay? There's nobody like President Trump who has the guts, who is not embedded in the establishment. He doesn't owe anybody, okay? This is a one in a lifetime chance, in my opinion. All right. We're going to end up with another moderate like George W. Bush or somebody that just doesn't have the balls or is not going to act the way they need to act to bring this country back to the founding principles that we've been talking about all the way through episode 46. Okay. So we have to kill that. We have to bring back the gold standard and stop this printing of money through the Federal Reserve. And I have a couple episodes on the Federal Reserve. The Federal Reserve needs to go away. Now the Federal Reserve was passed in the darkness of night on December 23rd, 1913. Again, 1913 was a bad year for this country. Okay. And the Federal Reserve needs to go away. And I'm going to talk too much more about the Federal Reserve now, but there is zero incentive for the clowns that run that to have a stable economy. Their mandate is to have a stable economy. Zero incentive. And the printing of money is the definition of inflation. When you expand the money supply, you end up making your dollars worth less, and they show up at higher prices in the grocery store and everywhere else. Expansion of the money supply. Right now, our money supply is sitting around $21 trillion. Scheduled to go up. All right. So we got to stop this spending by the government, bring us back to a more limited federal government in line with the Founding Fathers' vision, kill all the unconstitutional spending. All right. And stop issuing debt. And I'll remind you, the Federal Reserve is not a government agency. They're 12 independent corporations separate from the federal government. They're not under anybody's control. But Congress does have the right through the Federal Reserve Act of 1913 to either alter or eliminate the Federal Reserve. But we got to go back to a gold standard. And again, the gold standard is or a precious metal standard, which says, look, our money supply cannot exceed the value in our reserves. It's a nice little control that it will only exceed when the value goes up, which means the economy is progressing. Okay. Our money supply then can increase, and it will be non-inflationary when that happens. Right now, the gold standard is gone. Thank you, President Nixon and some other presidents before him that really worked towards getting the gold standard out. Okay. I think that happened in 1972. And every country in the world right now, none of the currencies in this world are backed by a precious metal like a gold standard. And what they call that, if you hear this on the news, they call it fiat currency. All this is fiat currency. That means currency that's not backed by any kind of precious metal. Okay. So to summarize, we got to kill the income tax and capital gains tax. We have to bring back the gold standard and eliminate the Federal Reserve. Those things have to happen in concert with going back to 100% tariffs and excise taxes for our source of revenue. Okay. But this should all be done by Congress, because anything the president does in this regard will be reversed by the next Marxist or rhino president. We got to write it into law, okay? It's got to be done by Congress. So, that's it. Tariffs in the Constitution. It is unconstitutional for the president to set tariffs, no matter how much you like it. You will rue the day that you supported it, because it will come back to bite you somewhere down the line. Okay. Episode 46. We'll see you guys next time. Hope this helps. And I hate to, you know, be against President Trump, because I love what he's doing. But when I look at the bigger picture, this is not sustainable. And no matter what he does, could be reversed. And it's not sustainable. And we need to get back to the basics of how the founders set up this country with the checks and balances, which to me are the most ingenious part of all the many ingenious things that they've done. The checks and balances of the Constitution right now are in disarray for so many different reasons. And it's laws like this that have taken that power away from Congress and allowed our country to get way off track. Okay. See you next time. God bless.
Thanks for listening to The Constitution Solution, one podcast under God. The Constitution is the solution to most of our country's problems. Other episodes can be found on our website at 1787solution.com, YouTube, Rumble, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and most other podcast platforms. I'm your host, Mark DeLuzio. Until next time, may God bless you, may God bless America, and may America bless God.